morning as usual with the praise of Allah. He explained his might and power, his justice and mercy, and his compassion and kindness towards his creatures. Imam Ali then throws light on the purpose of creation. After praising Allah, he has spoken about the Holy Prophet, explaining how and at what opportune moment his messenger has benefited mankind with his teachings. Then advising mankind to adopt piety as the basic principle of life, he says that piety is a duty laid down upon man. He counsels man to seek the help of Allah to lead a pious life, and to seek the help of piety to gain his blessings. He says that piety was advised to every nation by various prophets, that man will fully realize its benefits when he will be called upon to account for the use of power, wealth, and position granted to him. It is the best shield against vices and sins, and will help him to develop a noble character. He further advises people not to underrate pious persons and not to be overawed with worldly wealth, prosperity, power, and status. Speaking about the world and everything connected with it, he advises men not to be lured by its glitters, as everything which glitters is not gold. The praises offered here are misleading and insincere, and its wealth and power are subject to quick decay. This world is a faithless liar and will always suddenly desert those whom it has succeeded to elude. It is a place where bloodshed, devastation, and annihilation will always rule. Piety and piety alone will keep you out of its harmful and deadly clutches. Glory to Allah in the highest, to whom everything in nature offers its praise, whose might prevails upon everything and controls every aspect of nature, and whose glory predominates everywhere. I praise him for his constant blessings and great favors. He is so forgiving and merciful that he overlooks many of our shortcomings and pardons many of our sins. His decisions and ordinances are based on equity and justice. He knows what has passed and what is going to pass. He gave origin to the universe, an invention and an origination, and made it work according to his desire. The plan and program for all of it came out of his supreme knowledge. He neither followed anybody's advice or design, nor was necessitated to learn anything from anyone. Neither had he models of any architect before him, nor did he once waver in his plans, nor did he commit any mistake. I testify that Muhammad, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, is his chosen messenger and the selected servant who was sent amongst the human beings when they were confused and confounded, were groping in the darkness of ignorance, were being dragged towards damnation, and were prejudiced against truth and justice. O creatures of Allah, I advise you to adopt piety as the basic principle of your lives. Remember that piety is a duty made incumbent upon you by Allah. It is also your claim upon his benevolence, favors, and blessings. seek His help to assume piety in life and seek its help to gain His blessings, because piety will act as your shield and defense, and in life after death as your guide to paradise. Its ways are clear and simple. Those of you who espouse it will be benefited by it, and the one, Allah, who has imposed it upon you will guard it and will guard you. Piety was advised to nations before you and to individuals who were leading vicious lives. You and they will know its value and its utility when Allah recalls you all, when He takes back from you all that He has granted and asks you to submit an account of how you have used the power, privilege, status and wealth granted and blessings bestowed upon you. You will then find that there will not be many who have done their duty to man and Allah. They will be very few, and they will truly deserve the praise which He has conferred upon them in the Holy Quran. Only few of my servants are grateful for all that was granted to them. Surah Sabah 34:13. So friends, listen to the call of piety. Try your best to remain pious. Make it compensate for your past shortcomings, and let it act as your shield against encroachment of sinful ideas and vicious persons. Allow it to bring you out of your morbid ignorance of the teachings of Islam. Lead your life as a pious person. Make it a habit of your life. Wipe out your sins with its help. Yield to its cures for your moral ailments. Make it a means to provide for you His grace and blessings. He expired. When Allah created mankind, He was not in need of their obedience and prayers. Neither was He nervous of their disobedience, because disobedience or insubordination of men cannot harm Him. Requiring for them what they had wished for and leaving behind it the result of these actions, which are usually injurious, lamenting and repenting, they passed away, and the world did not miss their absence, nor did it grieve over their death. 197. Following is the famous sermon known as Khutbah al-Qasiyah. It is one of those sermons which have been accepted by Muslims of every shade of opinion as the original discourse of Imam Ali. In this sermon, he has censured Satan for its vanity and arrogance. He has not only called it the first to open up the ways of sin, but also explains the various ways in which it insinuates man and lures him to vice and wickedness. And then he warns mankind of what will happen if they follow its ways. All praise and glory be to Allah, who and who alone possesses the real power and grandeur. He has chosen these two attributes only for His being, has made them inaccessible for any of His creatures, and forbids them to falsely claim these attributes, because they are the consequences of His might and glory. He has destined eternal damnation as the fate of those who arrogantly pretend to possess them. He even tested His chosen angels to see whether they wrongly and unjustly pretend to possess these attributes, or they feel themselves truly and sincerely humbled before His might and glory. Though He knew the secrets of their hearts, yet to teach a lesson to His creatures, He told them, the angels, "I will create a mortal out of clay, and when I give it a proper shape and blow into him my inspiration, then fall you down before him, making obeisance to him." Surah Sa'd 37:71 and 72. But Satan scorned at this idea, and under the false notion of the superiority of religion and fanatic vanity, fire versus earth, it looked down upon Adam. Thus, it became the first enemy of the Lord, a leader of vain persons, and a chief of arrogant rebels against Allah. It laid the base of fanatic vanity, and sophistically imagined that he could usurp his attributes of might and grandeur. He thought that where his power and might are concerned, it could with convenience behave arrogantly and insubordinately, and with equal ease set aside humility and submission to his will. Have you realized how Satan's conduct reacted upon it, and how the Lord put it down for its behavior, and how its vanity brought upon it humiliation and disgrace? During its lifetime, it is accursed by him, and in the next world, its dwelling is hell. Remember that if Allah had willed to grant Adam a body of such high luminosity as to make his sight unbearable to eyes, or of such beauty that a glance at his face would have been sufficient to allure and entice minds, or such sweet fragrance, or to overpower mental faculties, he could have easily done so. And if he had so created Adam as to make him capable of exerting supernatural influences upon others, it would have meant that he had not allowed the angels free use of their discretion, and all of them, including Satan, would have without hesitation prostrated themselves before Adam. This forced obedience would not have been a voluntary act upon their part, and they would not have deserved any reward for it. It would have been compulsion by nature upon them. But Allah, the Almighty, tests His creatures with orders, where the reasons for these commands are not fully explained, but where the human being has option either to obey the order and do as the Lord desires him to do, or to refuse obeying it, as he wants to create a clear line of demarcation between good and bad people, between those who have implicit faith in his omniscience and in wisdom of his orders, and those who believe more in their knowledge than in that of Allah. And because he wants to remove arrogance, vanity, conceit, and egoism from the minds of his creatures, you must have Satan as an object of cautioning before your mind's eyes, and realize how the Lord has treated it. The long duration of divine worship performed and the obedience shown by it were set at naught. It had worshipped Allah for 6,000 years. It cannot be said for certain what was the actual period covered by those years, whether those were earthly years according to the sun and the earth, or those were some periods before the universe was created. With this example before you, can you imagine anyone being immune from the wrath of Lord if he commits similar sins? Never. How can you believe that Allah will admit a person to paradise in spite of the sin for which he has driven an angel out of it? No, it shall not be. And as it was for angels, so it shall be for man. His orders shall have the same effect everywhere, the paradise or the earth. No one of his creatures has many intimacy with him as to be exempted from his commands and dare go against them without punishment. Creatures of Allah, be on your guard against Satan, the enemy of Allah, lest it should poison your minds, may allure you with false hopes, and may try to overpower you with the help of its colleagues and camp followers, that is, your evil desires and the evil-minded people around you. I swear by my life that its sole purpose is to mislead you and to send you on the way to damnation. It has made complete arrangements for this and has found out our weaknesses. It had arrogance enough to declare this before Allah, as the Lord reveals in His holy book, where its words are quoted. Lord, you have caused me to go astray. I shall bedeck the evil ways of life for mankind, and thus tempt, allure, seduce, and mislead all of them, except sincere servants. Surah Al-Hijr 15:39. This assertion had one false accusation and one empty boast in it. The vile, vicious, and conceited people not only made this vain vaunting come true, but they also behaved in such a way as if its accusation was not false but justifiable. And thus, gradually all arrogant and vainglorious persons accepted the lead of Satan, and its hopes of alluring and misleading you went higher and higher from time to time. And as all the secrets of your weak-mindedness, false hopes, and unreasonable desires were revealed to it, its hold over you became stronger as days rolled on. It invaded the realm of your minds with its mercenaries and minions, recruited from amongst you. They are pushing you down the abyss of disgrace and degradation, and the whirlpool of wars, murders, and fratricide. Can you not feel that they have destroyed your capability to resist evil? They have blinded you to religion and to every form of truth. They have crushed your self-respect, and turning you into meek slaves, they have dragged you to hell, which is created for the followers of Satan. Remember that Satan is worse than all those enemies of yours who have declared their enmity, and against whom you collect arms and raise armies. It will make this world too wicked for you to live in peacefully and comfortably, and it will harm your religion also. Therefore, it is necessary for you to be on the guard against it, not to tolerate its overtures, and to treat its self-assertions and confidence with contempt. Try your best to combat it. From the very beginning, it objected to your forefathers Adam's superiority over it, was arrogant, and taunted him for his origin. It made evil desires invade your mind, and superstitions stop you from following the right ways. These inordinate desires, these superstitions, and these taboos have a hold over you in every phase of your life and in every sphere of your activity. You cannot easily find your way out of them or get rid of them, although they drag you into humiliations and disgrace, privation and want, dangers and damnation. You must abandon the idea of superiority of birth, blood or clan, and you must forsake dislikes, ill wills and hostilities prevailing amongst you from pre-Islamic days, because vanity, egoism, malice and spite are due to the suggestions and promptings of Satan. Its pride and arrogance, its desire to see you humbled and damned, and its wish to seduce and calumniate you, actuated to prompt and persuade you towards these defects. Be on your guard against them. Let humility and meekness be the crowns to adorn your heads, and let self-conceit, self-praise, and self-glorification be forsaken. Humbleness, patience, and forbearance are everywhere the best weapons of defense against the hordes of Satan, because it has its mercenaries and camp followers in every country and every nation. Do not be like the man who was vain and conceited against his own brother without possessing any real superiority over him. He became arrogant because envy developed into jealousy, and jealousy into animosity in his mind, and Satan fanned these flames into fury and made him kill his brother, with the result that he was damned eternally, and on him lies the responsibility of all the murders committed, all the fratricide indulged in, and all the wars that were fought since then. Do you realize that by openly behaving as enemies of Allah, by coming out to fight against the faithful Muslims, you have carried tyranny and oppression to its limits? You have created dissension and disunity among men, and you have fomented strifes and wars? Fear Allah and do not behave like vain and arrogant feudal chiefs and warlords of the pre-Islamic days, because vanity and conceit creates mutual distrust and hatred, which are the most fertile soils for Satan to sow its seeds in, and through them it seduced and tempted the past nations and dragged them into the pits of ignorance and infamy. For centuries, nation after nation followed in each other's footsteps, one nation rising on the mutilated corpse of the other. Remember that arrogance and vanity are such vices that they narrow human vision. Men forget that they are brothers to one another. Take my advice and obey not those leaders and those heads of tribes who are vain and arrogant on account of their wealth, power, and position, who pride over their ancestors, who lay the responsibility of evil on Allah, who deny that Allah has been kind to them, who disregard His commands and interdictions, and who are ungrateful to His favors and bounties. They are strongholds of selfish spirit, parochialism, and bigotry. They oppose the idea of the brotherhood of man. They are the centers of temptation, mischiefs, and revolts against law and order, and they propagate and defend the idea of the superiority of one race over the other, which has proved so harmful and injurious to humanity. So beware of these leaders. Fear Allah, do not abuse the bounties bestowed upon you, and do not envy each other for the blessings granted by Him, because envy and ingratitude will cause His bounties to be taken from you. Do not respond to the call of those who are not really Muslims, but pretend to be so, You frequently pollute your pure and honorable ideas with their vicious, sinful, and impious beliefs, and your sane views with their unhealthy and incorrect precepts. Often you invite and welcome their irrational, erroneous, and evil inclinations and tendencies in the midst of your honest and honorable ways of life. You do not realize that such people are beasts of burden upon whom Satan has loaded his schemes of wickedness and vice. They act as bases on which edifices of immorality and inequity are raised. They are addicted to the habits of disobeying the dictates of Allah and the Holy Prophet. They are the soldiers of Satan, with whose help it invades society, and they are the propagandists through whom it reaches your hearts and minds, blurs your vision, and adversely affects your capacity to hear truth and bear justice. Thus, it has completed its plan to make you a target, to suppress and fool you, and your fellow beings are acting as its tools and aids against you. It is for you to arm yourself against such an adversary. You must take lessons from the fate of nations passed before you. How mighty and powerful they were, and how they oppressed and terrorized the humanity. How they were punished for their iniquity and tyranny. How the wrath of Allah descended upon them, and through what hardships, suffering, and humility they were made to pass, go and see their ruins, the places where their might was humbled and their armies were annihilated, and the graves where their crown-bearing heads are lying under dust and stones. As you seek His protection against the vagaries of reason, beseech His support and shelter against the influence of base ideas and arrogance and superiority of birth and status. If Almighty Allah had allowed any of His creatures to be proud of anything, He would have been His chosen prophet and messenger. But He did not do so. On the contrary, He kept His prophets free from every type of pride, vanity, and arrogance. He liked in them humility and meekness. They were humble before their Lord. They were courteous, considerate, and kind to honest and faithful followers of religion. They were, to all appearances, meek and modest in this world. They were tested with hunger, hardships, adversity, and calamity. So be careful to consider wealth, power, and plurality of children as criteria of His blessings, because you do not know how Allah tries human beings through might and affluence. Thus, the Holy Quran warns us, "Do they think that we are favoring them by bestowing on them abundant wealth and children? It is not so. We provide them with the means of competing with each other in virtuous deeds, but they do not realize this." Surah Mu'min 23:55 and 56. Similarly, He tries arrogant, self-conceited, and proud people through pious people, whom these presumptuous persons regard as humble, helpless, meek, and low. There is the example of Prophet Moses and his brother Aaron before you. When they went to meet the Pharaoh, they were wearing coarse woolen cloaks and had shepherd's crook in their hands. They said to Pharaoh, "If you accept our teachings, you will retain your empire, power, prestige, and position." Pharaoh, hearing this, turned to his lords and nobles and said, "Do you not wonder that these two people try to bargain about my empire and power? In what wretched and miserable condition they are, and they want me to believe that if I accept their religion, they will guarantee continuance of my empire and my throne. Why should I not give each of them a few gold coins, so that they may get satisfied and go?" Pharaoh said this because to him, gold, its collection and possession, was the greatest achievement and the highest aim of human life, and he considered the tattered garments as degrading and humiliating to man. But Allah has different views about the acme of aims and achievements for humanity. If he had the same opinion as the Pharaoh had, he would have furnished his prophets with mines of silver and gold, and with green fields, orchards, and gardens. He would have made birds and beasts obey their commands. And if he had done so, the proud and powerful people could not have been tested along with poor and humble. They would have obeyed the prophets because of their might, power, and wealth. All the trials and testing would have been useless. There would have been no question of rewards and punishment. And all that has been revealed through the prophets would have been of no value. To stand through tests and trials boldly and bravely would have carried no value. Faithful following of religion would not have been brought any divine reward in its wake. Words and promises of the Lord would have been meaningless.